Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line. This is your hostess, Kat.
And this is your co-host, Carl. The Sci-Fi Party Line podcast is an audio program where we discuss your favorite and not-so-favorite science fiction TV shows and films.
Today, we will discuss Predestination.
I knew you were going to say that.
Oh my God. Okay.
Out the gate already.
So we are fresh off of watching the Ethan Hawke film.
By the way, this is a movie about time travel. So do we need to say spoilers? Spoiler, there's no possible way that we can discuss this film without spoilers. So if you haven't seen it,
you can't listen. No, you have to turn it off.
We demand you stop.
Because this is one that we really want you to watch.
Yeah.
You must watch this.
Yep.
So we're going to continue. Like, no, we're not. Shut it down now.
We're going to wait. We're going to wait for you to go and then watch the movie and then come back to this very spot at time index 1 minute. 20 seconds. So.
Well, you know, the intro music has to come in, and so...
Oh, one minute, 40 seconds.
Like 2 minutes. Okay, and whatever. Mm-hmm. So now you have returned to us after you've seen this film.
Your eyes were closed. You closed your eyes when you came back.
Yeah, right. And because sometimes when you come back, it's kind of a little shaky.
That's right. You know, you're going to be nauseous.
Right, so, you know, breathe now that you're back.
Put down the violin case.
Yeah, okay. So we fresh off of watching Vice, and Carl suggested that we.
Why did you even bring that up? Okay.
Carl suggested that we cleanse the palate, but I was like, Carl, I need to see something really good, and he was like, okay, well, I heard this Predestination was good, you know, and I was like, Ethan Hawke. I mean, I don't know.
He's
like a faux Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh my God.
I'm kidding, Ethan. And so I'd never heard. I kind of heard of it, I thought, and I didn't know whatever. So we go into it, slow burn on the intro. Not slow burn in a bad way, but it was just like the story built. I was never bored. I looked at the time once, only to see if it was like how late it was, because I was just fascinated. So being a film about time travel, you expect gadgets and gizmos and tech speak and a hacker and I don't know. You know, you expect a leather and guns and all these things, but I think they took kind of a cue from Doctor Who.
Yes, or...
Carl's head.
The Adjustment Bureau.
Absolutely.
This was a hat, folks. I was gestured like a hat. She said Carl's head.
It was literally your head.
I'm going like this.
Whatever. Carl, you want to kind of recap? Because you're kind of more eloquent than I am. People know this already, so I'd like for you to recap.
Jeez. Yeah, leave this one to me. The Mobius strip of sci-fi movies.
And you want me to explain it?
Just bang that out real quick.
I will sound like Channing Tatum trying to describe his boots.
Okay.
All right.
Well, this is a time travel movie, and it is mostly about the time travel bureau that are like time cops. They are supposed to prevent crimes, I guess really large crimes. They're supposed to do things to correct the timeline of the world. There are details that I'm still not entirely clear on, like the entire width of the time that they can jump. We understand that that time travel
is 50 years from the date of 1981, which time travel
forward and back is what they say. But there's some other strangeness that makes that seem a little unusual. And okay. You know, we can get into that. But anyway, so given this time bureau, we are introduced to Ethan Hawke's character, who is an agent in this time world. He has made himself quite notable in the bureau by stopping all kinds of crimes. And he is the one crime that he's not been able to stop, the one person he's never been able to catch, is this Fizzle Bomber, who's responsible throughout the timeline that he has known for these explosions that have killed hundreds of people. And so, throughout his career, he's tried to find the Fizzle Bomber. He's done other things, never caught the Fizzle Bomber. We pick up where he's right on the tail of the Fizzle Bomber, and we're going to try to figure out who the bomber is and how to stop him. Well,
we jump back in time to a baby
Okay. We follow him into the 70s. He meets a person at the bar, and the two of them begin a fascinating conversation. He is undercover as his time agent, and he's talking to this person who's wandered into the bar. And the person that they're going to share a drink together has a story for Ethan, an amazing story that they want to share together. And the person at the bar goes into the story of their life. Then we start from the very beginning, the birth of this person, their history. Starting in 1940, they dropped off at an orphanage. This young lady, it turns out that the person that Ethan is sharing a drink with was born a woman. It's not evident that that is the case when he encounters her, now him, at the bar, but turns out that she was born a woman, born a girl, and goes through her life, her young, difficult life, of feeling a little different, a little outcast. And here's something that was really that I need a little bit of help with. Now, it's starting in the 40s. And they progress in the timeline into the space age. One of the first major jobs that she tries out for, the young girl that we see in the orphanage, the young girl whose life that we follow, the young girl who becomes a man that encounters Ethan Hawke and the bar, one of the first jobs that she tries out to be is a member of this
Space Corps.
Space Corps. Now, this is set, I'm assuming, at this point in the 60s. When she's trying out for this job. And what is the Space Corps? Did you get what that was?
The Space Corps was essentially, they were trying out women to fly into space with men so men would not have to use their hands in a bottle of lotion.
So comfort women for astronauts is what's going on.
Yes.
Now, given the state of the space program during the 60s and into the 70s, the amount of time and effort that they invested into this particular part of the story is confusing to me. One, let's look at her tryout. Okay, so, you know, besides the fact that she went through questionnaires, she did very well. The training that she went into, when they put the VR helmet on her,
mm-hmm.
to test her ability to fly, is what was going on there?
To see if she got air sickness, yes.
To see if she got air sickness. Do you recall any technology similar to that in the 60s?
It was a secret program, Carl. We don't know about that.
I'm just saying,
the girl... You don't know about all the tech... Now, you haven't read all of the NASA papers that they've kept from us over the years, so they could have had this secret technology that you don't know about, Carl.
If this...
That's why we have...
If this was 1965, let's just say it was 65, okay when this stuff was happening, this girl and her group were rocking Oculus Rifts.
Yeah.
In 1965.
Yeah. I believe it. Yeah.
Okay, so this part of it I found problematic, because given the resolution, given the amount of technology that she had, it felt asynchronous. It felt like the future. It felt more advanced than the 60s. I don't care what you say. The secret programs that evolved during that time led to things like transistors and lasers, not okay, full Carl, immersion VR systems.
I'm going to stop you right there, Carl, because that was not the important part. I think perhaps they had a discussion on how they wanted that to look, and they wanted it to look sleek and 60s.
It was.
But I think it looked sort of like the time because they had the chairs that were kind of shaped like the helmets were shaped or whatever. I don't think that was what you were supposed to focus on, the technology. And I know, sir, that's what you do because that's how your brain is wired. But, you know, let's go get past that because this movie is bigger than that.
Here's the only reason that this is a big deal. When you're watching this movie, especially at this point, you don't know what's going on. You're paying attention to every detail because you're trying to figure out where are we at every moment. Is this our future? Is this our timeline? Is this an alternate timeline? So details like that were important, and it kind of threw me a little bit. But anyway,
it didn't throw me because of the way they were dressed. They were dressed like the 60s. They had on this. They had the look of it. So it did not throw me. I knew exactly where they were.
I'm just going to point out that technology seemed a mighty advance for the time. But I'm going to let it go. But I'm just saying that seemed to. So anyway,
let it go for me because it's my birthday.
And besides, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday. Do you recall there being Comfort Woman in the space program?
Yes.
That flew on the space program.
Yeah. Okay. Because they were women, they didn't mention them at all.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Anyway, so that whole piece seems a little odd. But anyway.
But you know what? Time travel being invented in the 80s.
Yes.
You're okay with that?
Well, now, see, that's the detail that that's why I don't think we can just let this go. But anyway.
I think we can because they were advanced enough in the 80s to invent time travel. So maybe this is a different future.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to bring up. That's why this little detail seems so important to me. Because
this is a different 60s.
That's what I was saying. That is what I'm
thinking. Well, I mean, duh.
What do you mean, duh? Nothing is obvious in this movie. You just try to...
I'm serious. I felt like at some point, because they said that the 80s, they invented time travel, that this was an alternate human universe, and so I just let it go.
That is the piece I wanted to bring up, because this movie hints, and it's not real obvious, it's very quiet details.
Very quiet.
This is the kind of stuff that I said... That's why I didn't just let it go, because that is the first hint that we are exposed to an alternate timeline from the one that we know. That is the very first hint in this movie.
Well, because they had, like, this bombing took place in this certain time, I was like, well, that never took place, and we've never heard of the Fizzle Bomber, so right there, we know that we're not in our Carl and Kat's timeline.
Unless it was repaired at the end of the movie. Anyway, so just say this little detail was the first hint that we get that something is a little bit off. At this point, we don't know that time travel is invented in the 80s, remember? So I'm just trying to point out how these little hints, especially in time travel movies, tell you a lot about the story and about the world that you're in up until this moment. Geez, the most advanced technology we've seen is somebody walking into a bar. So it's just really, really, really quiet what's going on. So, okay. So, long story short, and her efforts to try to...
Well, so you jumped ahead a little bit. She's Moses. She got dropped off at a... or is she Annie? She's orphan Annie.
Yes.
She gets dropped off at an orphanage. She is smarter... stronger than the other girls. They made a point to let us know this. Yes. Because of her, and she was really good at math and physics or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff. And because of her exceptional ability, she was approached by the Space Corps and recruited to try out for the program to be a comfort woman to the space, to the astronauts, because she could not be one herself. So she, like Carl said earlier, excelled at everything. She kicked a lot of ass. She took a lot of names. And then there was some sort of investigation.
It was an examination. Physical examination.
And they told her at this point that she could not proceed.
Now,
they didn't tell her why. They just kicked her out.
That's right. That's right. The doctors detected something unusual about her biology and asked her to leave. Now, it was timed, interestingly, in the story because she'd just gotten into a fight with some of the girls in the Space Corps tryout. And so when she was asked to leave, she believed she was asked to leave because of her conduct. She believed that because of a fight or the last straw, that they were asking her to leave the program. And so it was, she was a little disappointed by that. Now, just so happens that the commissioner, the only guy that we could discuss, we've seen him before in the movie because he is who sent Ethan Hawke back in time. So to see him in the Space Corps environment here, we know that he's significant and he's been watching her. He comes up to her at this time and says, hey, the Space Corps is nice, but we use it as a recruiting program for something else. Let me know if you're interested in something else. She expresses an interest, and then they kind of go their separate ways because he says he's going to help her, but she doesn't see him come back to help her. She's wondering what happened to this guy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then from there, she, I guess, carries on with her life, and she's sitting on a... She walks out of something, and she bumps into a guy.
Yes.
And she said that this guy, she fell in love with this guy. They hit it off. She knew, this guy knew her thoughts. They fell in love. They had a hot rabbit sex. And
we don't see that in this movie.
No, we don't see the hot rabbit sex, but they do it, and she becomes pregnant. Well, this prevents her from joining the program that the commissioner guy wants her, and he just kind of abandons her. She goes to a group home. She gives birth to a baby girl. A doctor comes up to her, cigarette in tow, in the hospital.
Of course, that's how they do it.
Yeah. And tells her that she had to have a cesarean. Her baby was fine, but she had an irregularity. And that irregularity was that she had both the internal...
sex organs.
Yeah.
Man and woman.
But but having the baby destroyed her woman parts. Her ovaries and uterus had to be removed. But brilliant enough as he was, they were able to salvage the male parts. And now, hey, you just gave birth to a baby, but you're a guy.
Okay, so at this point, Kat shot me a look while we were watching the movie, because we are, at this point, we are about halfway through the film, and we are both trying to figure out what in the world is this movie about.
Because, we haven't seen any time travel, except for, like, once, maybe.
Yeah.
It was like at the beginning while we were forming opinion, but mm-hmm. It was just like there was no time travel at all.
Nope.
No future, nothing.
Not a lot of gadgets other than the Oculus Rift helmets, the Spaceball helmets. So we're trying to figure out what in the world is going on. Why, why this much backstory? What is happening? And what does it have to do at all with Ethan Hawke, the time traveler, and the fizzle bomber? So let's proceed with the story, shall we?
So where do we go from there?
Okay, so we can go back to the, you want to go back to the bar where the two of them are having their conversation. And this is the most fascinating story that Ethan Hawke has heard. They even made a little bet over it, a bottle of vodka or something. At this point,
looked like rum.
Yeah, okay. At this point, Ethan Hawke turns to her and goes, "So, that's your story." Oh, and of course, at this point, we recognize that the girl is now the man that Ethan Hawke is talking to in the bar. So Ethan turns to her and goes to him now and goes, "Okay, so that's the end of your story. That's what's going on." And you can tell at this point Jane, he Jane, had had a rough life. And
in John.
Well, not yet. All right, you would call him John? Fine, we'll call him John. At this point, he had had a rough life. Things had been difficult. Didn't seem like
anything. Well, his name is Jane when he's in the bar. I mean, in the bar, his name is John.
All right. There's a reason why I was holding that off. But okay, anyway. So, John has had a difficult life and is, you know, just feels like nothing's worked his way. Space Corps didn't work out. The other job didn't work out for a while. When John was younger, she even took a job cleaning houses. It was just, nothing's worked out right. And one of the main reasons he feels this way is because she was abandoned by the guy that got her pregnant. She sees that as one of the main reasons that she was not able to excel at this new job that she really wanted, this secret opportunity.
Well, no, because the guy told her that he'd take care of her, and then he abandoned her. So she was she either was going to be in the secret program or be a wife, you know. And then he left. She couldn't do either one because she was pregnant, you know. So it's
either way, she sees it as his fault because right, abandoned her. From either being married and carrying on with a long-term relationship, or from being part of the other program.
Right, that's what I think I just said that, but okay.
So what I was saying is, she blames him for that.
Right, no, yeah.
So at this point, she's upset, and then Ethan turns to John and says, well, what if I could put that guy right in front of you? What if I could make the case for you to meet this person who's caused you so much pain, would you be able to kill him? At which point, John is ready. John's absolutely, absolutely, I can do this. At this point, Ethan says, well, come with me. And takes John off to the back and says,
No, down in a creepy basement.
Hang on, we haven't gotten there yet. He takes to the back and he turns to John and he says, you know, Commissioner, who we can't remember his name, but he brings up the fact that he's working for the Commissioner. And John goes, whoa, really? You know the Commissioner? Is this part of the program that I missed out on? And Ethan's like, yes, it is. Come on. This is your chance to get back in. You just have to do one important thing. And then they begin to proceed down in the dark basement.
Creepy basement.
Of the bar that they were all working in.
And so Ethan Hawke breaks out the
gadget.
The TARDIS violin case.
We've been waiting for the time travel device. And yes, indeed, it is this closed violin case. I think it's a violin. Is it violin, trumpet case? I don't know.
It's a violin case.
It's a closed violin
trumpet
case.
Trumpet case would have a bigger, whatever.
With little combo lock tumblers on it that allow you to dial where you want to go in space and time.
Yeah, and so they have this really creepy, ominous thing exchange, and then John did not believe Ethan Hawke.
Well, I mean, first of all, John's been escorted into the basement of a dark building, locked the door behind him. Ethan ain't telling him jack about why he's there, what's going on. And there's this whole lot of, we need to get real close. You gotta trust me. Close your eyes while we hold on to this violin case in a dark basement. Oh yeah, this sounds legit. This all makes total sense. And of course, the guy just told you that he has a magical violin case that's going to make you travel through time. Close your eyes.
I like it.
So, needless to say,
I believe
him. There was not a lot of time, thankfully, for this reality to sink in. Because dial them tumblers, and sure enough, it works.
It works. So what Ethan has on site? So there's a voiceover that's going on sporadically throughout the movie, and so Ethan Hawke has gone through these particular places in time, left himself
notes,
clothes, money, everything he needs to do to blend in a particular time. So this particular time, they set out. John goes out to find the commissioner, what he thinks is the commissioner, to kill him.
Hang on. Because first,
I just went through this.
The first important thing is you got to tell them where they went. Where did they jump to?
Just tell them the time so I can finish what I'm doing.
Okay. Well, their first jump was back to 1945, which is the time where young John Jane was first.
No, 45 is when she was born. 65 is where they went. Carl, put this away. You're confusing yourself, son. Okay.
Listen, just go
son,
ahead.
Son, you're confusing yourself.
Go ahead.
Okay. You're distracted by... Because what he's doing is he's being Eric right now, and he's playing the movie in the background, and he's distracting everyone because he just can't
talk.
Well,
don't look at my screen.
I need for you to put it away because you're distracting me. What you're doing.
Don't look at the screen.
But I'm looking at you because you're distracted and you're not having a good conversation. You're just trying to jump in and go in the order it was received. We don't need to go in the order. We need to just talk about it. We don't need to recap the whole thing. People have watched it because they have turned off the thing because we told them that it was spoilers. So they know the story. We're just trying to get it straight for us. Can you close the laptop?
I'm going
to
keep this open. You can just
can you close the laptop?
I'm listening very carefully
I will,
to you.
I will close this laptop, Carl.
Go ahead. I'm just giving
okay.
details. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. We had a fight.
So picky.
Anyway, they jump to 65. Whatever. John sees Jane. And John, all of a sudden... she bumped into him, and all of a sudden she realizes, Carl realizes, to our shock and horror and confusion, that John bumped into himself when he was a younger girl, and that the guy that she fell in love with was actually herself, and she got herself pregnant and abandoned herself.
That's right.
Can you repeat what I just said?
That is the first knot in our Mobius strip.
Would you
stop
doing that with your hand? Gross.
You don't like the knot?
I don't want to see it.
You see, you've done a great job of describing the first linkage in our Mobius strip.
No,
but
what
there
I just
is another.
Said, I just, I know, but let me just say,
okay, yes.
This is where we, because I felt this coming.
Yes.
I felt it coming, okay. But I didn't think this film would go there, and I didn't think it was that deep, or I didn't know what it was going
to
do.
We were not expecting them to
go
here.
But I was just like, oh my God, is this guy about to impregnate himself at an earlier time period
when she was
her
a girl
life.
Mm-hmm. That's
and then like there's this whole gender identity thing going on and this whole ego self-love thing, like you fall in love with yourself or
Back to the Future was rough because Marty's mom was falling in love with him.
Yeah.
And so we thought that was a little rough. So let's take that into Predestination. They've taken this to a whole nother level up in here.
Oh my God. That's just the first jump, Carl.
First loop in our Mobius strip.
We didn't know what was gonna happen here.
Mm-hmm.
We had no idea. I had not heard anything about. You guys have been great in not spoiling this.
And we tried to warn you. So if you're listening to us and haven't seen the movie, that's on you.
Suck. You suck. Okay, you may be sucking yourself. Okay, no.
Don't go there.
I was just saying, it's putting me in that mind frame. Like, you had a baby, you went back at it, you're now a man, and then you go back in time, and then you are so enamored with your own self that you have sex with yourself and get yourself pregnant.
Okay, let's just not get into the details of that.
No, I'm just saying that is wow. I have never, my mind has never done that. And to see it like that, that was new. That's new for me.
One of the things about being a time traveler is you can't have family or a lot of external connections. for a variety of reasons. So this is a very unique solution to not having additional ties as far as assuming the job of a time traveler. This person was emotionally self-contained in their history and their experience. But of course, we're not done yet.
Oh, no.
First linkage is in the movie.
First linkage. Mm-hmm. So then, this happened because Ethan Hawke let John go off on his own while Ethan Hawke made an illegal jump to go seek out the Fizzle Killer. Now, when he jumped, he actually bumped into the Fizzle Bomber and they had a fight. So at some point, I'm thinking about this and I'm looking at this fight. And I noticed something really similar with their fighting styles. And I thought to myself, oh my God, he's fighting himself. Because the blows look...
He's fighting himself? That's jumping ahead.
No, but it looked like Ethan Hawke was fighting a guy equal skill. And they had the same kind of body blows or whatever. And I was just like, okay, so we've already had... A guy who was originally a girl go back in time, have sex with himself and get himself pregnant. We're gonna also have the cop that's chasing everyone around go back and fight him. What? I don't even understand. So it happened so fast. I wasn't able to complete the thought because they moved on.
Of course.
So what happens after that? They jump. Ethan links back up with John. Ethan sees John sitting on a bench with Jane, tells them they have to go. This is when Jane got abandoned.
Right, yes.
Right. So Jane is abandoned, she has her baby, and then John is taken back to like Section 51 or whatever.
When you said he got called back to Section 51 or whatever, that wasn't the case. He was waiting in the hospital for the commissioner to show up. That's where they met up and began to have their discussion about how to proceed next. Why is he in the hospital?
Still a baby.
So he and the commissioner are having a discussion about, look, I know you made off with you're making illegal jumps, or you made an illegal jump. You violated all the space-time continuum rules. You've jacked stuff up. I don't know what you're doing, but you're going to have to pay the repercussions. Turn in your badge. This is going to be it. And so he goes, okay, yeah, just one more thing I have to do. And we find out at this point that the commissioner recognizes that he's a little off book and is going to let him proceed. The commissioner disappears, and our Ethan proceeds with the next stage of the mission.
Which is taking the baby.
He grabs the baby. He takes John's baby back in time and drops her off at the orphanage. So now we recognize the next loop in the Mobius strip.
Okay, now this is the shit
the
right
The next
here.
Loop in the Mobius strip is the baby is Jane and John. That's the next stage. So we realize that...
So she had sex with herself to give birth to herself.
Handy when you've got, both genders and you've got to keep your insular life as a time traveler.
Let's repeat that, Carl.
Yes.
She had sex with herself.
Right.
To give birth to herself.
Paradox is rampant. Paradox... She is definitely independent of causality in the greater times. It's a bubble all focused around this time situation. The person's like totally separate from time now.
Mind blown.
Yeah.
Gave birth to herself.
All right.
Okay, so your mind is blown from that. Okay, Ethan does that. John is pissed. He goes back to the Time Lords, freaking Gallifrey. They he's strapped in bed. They gotta relax. Ethan's like, oh, you know, I'm going to Reno. I'm retiring. It was New York. And he was like, what? Do you want to be so close to New York City, retiring? Well, you know, the Fizzle Bomber is blitz, blah, blah, blah. He's like, yeah, it'll be fine. So Ethan Hawke goes, takes his violin case. Am I on the right track?
Close enough.
Okay. Thank you, Carl. On my birthday, of all things. And so he takes his violin case and he does his little tumbler, whatever, lock thing. And he was like, it reads out decommissioned.
And the reason is because, remember, he was making his illegal time jump. The commissioner said, look, this stuff's got to stop. You're going to have to pay, you know, pay the piper. However, the commissioner did say one interesting thing, two interesting things.
Okay.
The first interesting thing he says to Ethan when Ethan is like, ah, don't know why I've never been able to catch this guy. This Fizzle Bomber is a terrorist. He's causing problems. This is just terrible. And the commissioner says, well, you know, we're not sure. You know, some people may think of him as a terrorist, but he's just operating on a different set of rules. He's doing something that we don't understand. And that's the first hint, if you're paying attention, that, wait a minute, come on, Commissioner, he's been chasing this dude his entire life. What do you mean? It's supposed to be, you know, terrorists, for us or against us.
And then he's like, everything happens for a reason, mm-hmm. and everything that happened before will happen again, and it's all predetermined.
The second thing that he says when, at two different times, but the second thing that he says is basically, these rules are a bit confining to keep our time travelers in line, and that, you know, maybe it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to have a time traveler on the side, just kind of free of the rules, cleaning up any loose edges. He says that.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now we're wondering, okay, what are the true motivations of the commissioner? But he's already let Ethan slide. He's going to give him the retirement package. Now we're back in 1975, New York City. Ethan's just jumped back. He's put the case down. He's all happy. Well, okay, I guess this is the end of the road. The decommission words appear on the time travel device, and then they click over to fail, which means that it didn't self-destruct. It's still sitting right there in front of him, and Ethan feels, you know, maybe my mission is not quite over yet.
Then he has this piece of paper with a fragment of the bomb stapled to it in a plastic.
Which was given to him by the commissioner.
Right. And it has circled locations of where, in pencil and handwriting, where the
Components of the bomb were purchased.
And locations where the Fizzle Bomber may be. So he had this last one where he looked at all these fuzzy pictures. He did all this, you know, investigations. Something started turning in his mind or whatever. And he goes out to the laundromat. And then what, Carl?
Well, he walks in to the laundromat where he believes perhaps the Fizzle Bomber is. And he sees his older self. Ethan's older self, he sees. So, yeah, Ethan is the Fizzle Bomber, of course.
Yes. Yes.
Now, one other little detail. Time travel's not easy on people.
No,
particularly
apparently
not. Not on the psyche.
Not on the psyche. There's like, oh, you know, there's bouts of depression. There's
psychosis is the most important thing, which is very
so
clear. So future Ethan, who's looks sort of like what is it, rough? What's the guy's name? Well,
he
looks a little shady. He looks a little raggedy, but he's giggling to himself because finally his past him has caught up with his present him, and he is very happy to tell him that the decommissioned violin case time travel device still works just fine, and that he has proceeded with the mission that he was set out upon, not just to catch the fizzle bomber, but, you know, to correct things in the timeline to save lives. That's his real mission. None of this fizzle bomber stuff. Just so happens that what we saw as the fizzle bombings was actually future Ethan rectifying timeline issues where more people in the future die. It's just his bombings prevent the even greater deaths in the future. And so all along, the fizzle bombers really just been protecting even more innocents in the future. Well, now, retired Ethan has a problem with this. And
not only does he have a problem with that, you kind of get the vague hint that older, crazy Ethan is flirting with retired, younger Ethan. There was this sort of, we can be together and we can do this.
We're
and
all we've ever had.
Yeah, we can, like, go off holding hands until the, it was kind of creepy. And then Ethan was like, I don't know what that you talking about. And no. And so he gets him, right?
Yeah, he takes him out right there, shoots him. This whole discussion was pretty much at gunpoint. And retired Ethan doesn't want to become the crazy, the crazy fizzle
Unabomber
bomber.
Unabomber Ethan. Yeah, and right. it was just, so he capped him. Older, crazy Ethan was shocked that he was shot. Kind of stood there, lingered for a bit, fell dead. Then Ethan goes back to his hotel.
Well, there's one other little detail.
Oh.
Because this whole conversation in the laundromat between crazy Ethan and retired Ethan has been over a raggedy, they've had this discussion, but old Ethan had a scrapbook which outlined each time that he had gone back in time or gone forward in time to prevent more deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Each of the bombings that we'd seen in the history, he had clippings that said, look, this is how many people I saved. This is how many people I'd saved. And so now, despite the fact that older Ethan has died, retired Ethan has the time machine, and he also has the entire scrapbook outlining each case that old Ethan had rectified the future timeline to save lives. So he's got the guidebook, he has the time machine, and old Ethan is now gone. So the question is, does our new Ethan proceed with the timeline? Does he take on the task of who old Ethan, the job that old Ethan did?
But that's not even the end.
Really? What else?
Okay, so we go back to this hotel room. And we see Ethan poring over this information that you were talking about, having this conversation in his head, figuring things out. And then, you know, there's a point in the film where John gets an examination because he wants to become part of the Space Corps again. But part of the operation when John got his penis out was them removing breasts, and there was a cesarean scar
and a breast reduction scar.
The breasts were removed,
right? The scars for that was there.
Yeah, that's what I said. The breast removal scars and the cesarean scar. If you were not playing with the computer, you would have heard me say that. And so we see these scars. They're pretty horrible. But as Ethan stands up, his shirt is open, we see these same scars
on old Ethan.
Mm-hmm. On time travel retired Ethan, not yes. old Ethan that he just shot.
Mm.
So what we've been seeing the whole time was one person. And that time travel is really rough. And testosterone works in this instant. Because not only is Jane John, but John is Ethan Hawke. And Ethan Hawke is the Fizzle Bomber, and the Fizzle Bomber gave birth to himself. Wow. That was a film. That, I think, was masterfully done. And I'm sorry we had to do a recap. I'll put in the show notes like where we stopped doing a recap, because we really just had to get it straight, talk it out,
so we could get on to the real discussion now about how we feel about the things that we have seen.
Okay, Carl. So, because we needed to confirm that we saw the same thing.
Yeah, I think we have.
Okay. Have you seen anything like this before, Carl? Because I don't think that I've ever seen anything. It was respectfully done. Like, it could have been disgusting or, you know, not respectful in a way, but I don't think it was, you know, gross.
It was not gross. Yeah. No, it's just so crazy. I've always felt like modern movies seem to give up on backstory, or they're so interested in throwing explosions or action in our faces right now that they don't take the time to build a story. Would you say they took the time to build the story in this
way? They built the story, but you know what? They built it in a way that did not bore me, because all I kept doing, they built it in a way that it made your mind work, because they left out just enough to tell a story, but like keep you asking questions like, what is really happening right now? Because I tell that this man in this bar is not a man in a bar, but that is a woman that looks like a man. Then I was, you know, confirmed that it was correct, you know, and you know, we get this whole thing. But the story,
when it comes to time travel stories, I always like the little hints as to what's to come. You watch it with an extra eye for detail, because you know that something that you see, one person in the background, a sound that you hear, is going to come back and be significant to the story. So you have to watch it with a little extra patience, a little extra attention, and that makes it it's sort of like a puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a puzzle. It's a story puzzle. So I always like good time travel has that going on. And man, that was in effect. So when you're watching the first half of this movie, we are just like Kat was giving me the eye. You're going, what is going on here? Why am I watching? And even when she shot me the eye at this point, I just sat stoic, because I knew that some of these pieces were going to start to fall back together.
I
desperately hoped that they would.
No, I gave you the eye because I was amused and entertained, but I gave you the eye when we both realized that Jane and John were the same person. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just like, I just couldn't be stoic anymore, because I was like, okay, we're watching something different. We're watching something that somebody took the time to layer in a way that, I mean, I figured out the Jane and John, but I did not figure, I knew that Ethan Hawke and the Fizzle Bomber could quite possibly be the same person, but I thought it was going to be this cross same person thing, two people, but two different people. But I didn't think it was all going to be one person, and that takes skill to write.
There's a lot of misdirection here. So even if you try to outrun the story with your mind to figure out, okay, well, is this going to happen? Here's some of the misdirection that went on. At some point, you might have thought the commissioner was the Fizzle Bomber, because of the way that he was described, he had sympathy for what was going on with the Fizzle Bomber. He was setting up Ethan with the extra gear that he could take to him. He allowed him to go off page and off book to do his little thing. So you might have just, there was a moment where you're like, well, you know, Ethan's the hero, or is the good guy in the story, and he's just trying to rectify things. Probably the commissioner is doing something on the side. Maybe he's the Fizzle Bomber. Here's another little detail.
Maybe Ethan, the commissioner is Ethan.
That, yeah.
Shit. Hell.
That also had occurred, you know, crossed my mind, but I don't think that is the case.
I know, but hell, yeah, mind has already bended.
Well, why not think that? Because we see at the very beginning of this movie, when we are first introduced to Ethan Hawke, he's gone through a terrible situation. Mm-hmm. He's been burned up and just escaped a difficult situation. And so his face is totally reconstructed after the burn. The doctors tell him right away that you don't look like who you used to look like. You may not be expecting who you see in the mirror. It tells that right at the beginning of the movie. And so what that leaves a whole lot of space open for some possibilities.
But you know what I thought was funny now that I think about it? Is that the remark after the doctor said that, he was like, my mother wouldn't even recognize this face. And I'm like, that's so weird for him to have said that, because it's true.
Yes.
But your mother, so I guess you don't recognize your...
We know for a fact that his mother did not recognize his face, because that's who we met at the bar. Whenever I'm watching a story like this, again, my mind is trying to put the pieces together. It's trying to outrun the story and everything. And so I kind of had a feeling that the baby and that Ethan and that John Jane were going to be the same person. But in order for that to have been the case, I was thinking, well, wait, she would have had to have sex with herself. They're not going to go here in this movie. There's no way that could be it. It'll just be there. So the comfortable direction was to, you know, oh, the commissioner's the bomber. Ethan's just trying to help the kid out. That was the safe option. They did not go safe.
No, they didn't.
With this motion picture.
No, they didn't.
They tied things up very neatly.
Like, it makes 12 Monkeys and Looper look clumsy by comparison.
Well, of course. Yeah.
And those were great films.
They were fascinating and fabulous. Well, you know, these 12 Monkeys, but they only...
Excuse me,
Carla? They only... I'm not a fan of Looper. We did this. But primarily, we only had one or two jumps in those movies. This movie... You got a bunch of jumps going on. And you're talking about feedback.
This is the most irresponsible time travel I have ever seen.
Well, I don't know. She was very neat. It didn't affect many other people with shenanigans going on. And in the end, held true to his mission, which was to try to prevent deaths, to try to minimize damage in the future, to try to save lives. And so from one perspective, this, you know, the bombings appeared to kill a lot of innocent folks, but then again, still had to make the decision. Now, okay, so the question, go on.
So on the one hand, he went back in time to stop incidents from happening that would have killed more people. So those don't exist because he prevented them, but now something else exists in their place, which is other deaths. So now what's in the scrapbook is only known to him, and the only thing in history is what he's doing.
At the time that retired Ethan encounters old Ethan, the future in the scrapbook has not yet occurred. So the decision as to whether or not the future deaths will or will not occur, and which there will be, rests in the hands of retired Ethan. Hypothetically, now the truth is, we know retired Ethan proceeds to do the dark timeline
because he saw himself on fire and gave himself the violin case.
Not because of that. That was earlier in the time loop. The reason we know this is what old Ethan was saying to retired Ethan. Old Ethan tells retired Ethan that you have a choice. You know, he says, if you shoot me, you realize you're going to become me. retired Ethan refuses, and he says, "No, this isn't going to be for me. I'm not going to do this." And old Ethan says, "Well, what do you think you're going to do? You're going to marry that girl that you met in the antique store. Yeah, right. In the antique store. You're going to have a quiet life. Everything is going to go on." The reason he was saying this was not speculation. It is because it is the life that he had already lived. So he, in that moment, is telling retired Ethan, "This is what you're going to do." He's letting him know at that point. All just like how earlier in the story, John had told Jane what she was thinking. Old Ethan is telling retired Ethan what's going to happen the exact same way, which is why I made such a big deal about the fact that the scrapbook was right there, because the scrapbook is the blueprint.
Well, no, I get that, but there's a chance, because we didn't physically see this, or did we? Oh. Well,
a lot of time I feel frustrated at the end of movies like this, where it ends and you're not sure what happens. I don't feel that way with this movie because we know what happens. We know what happens in this movie. There, the whole title of Predestination implies that you don't necessarily have a choice. Given what's happened in this story, given how tightly wound the Mobius strip has been all throughout it, it's predestined. We know how it's going to go. So, Commissioner has always described John as a patriot, as a hero, as an accomplished agent. I believe the Commissioner did not decommission his time device so that he could go on in the future and sacrifice himself for the greater good. He sacrificed himself the entire time. Coming into existence was a sacrifice. The life he and she live was a sacrifice. And the death, the neat death in the laundromat, only to continue the mission and have it close that very same way, all the loops close. It's all very neat. It all seems to be predestined. So,
it's a loop that's kind of never ending. They kind of say that, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, where does it end? There's no beginning, because it never really.
My assumption that it ends in the laundromat. That's the end. That is his final mission, because your final mission is just as important as your first mission. So, in the linear timeline, external of everything that we saw happen, this is going to end. This ends at his final mission, which is when he comes back to the laundromat, in the linear timeline. But in the Mobius jump around timelines that we've seen, the multiple incarnation,
because it keeps going in the same circle, because he keeps being born to this was great.
So as an agent, I mean, he really is unique, because everybody else is in some way or another connected to the external timeline. No one simply winks into existence and then winks out of existence as a clean, neat loop. That's why I'm assuming the Commissioner took such an interest early on, because within the time span that time travel is possible, if what you're saying, it's 50 years either side, and that's it, they never create time travel after that, if that's all we got, John is the one person who's the super agent that's able to do as much, quote, good as possible within that timeline. And when he dies in the laundromat, that is his retirement in the outside world. So after that 50 years, there's no more John saving things in the future. That's the end of his mission. So that is an interesting concept and a unique existence for a time travel agent.
Okay. that I just.
We're always talking about wanting to see something different. We're always talking about, oh, we've seen this before.
I mean, Vice was terrible, but this cleansed the palate because it was just.
This is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. It is possible. And look, how many gunfights and explosions did we have? You know, other than the historical evidence of an explosion.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we saw one little. Well, he got his face burned. So one little explosion at the beginning where his face gets burned. But other than that, not a whole lot of gunplay. He really just shot himself a couple of times. Beat himself up. You know, they were able, and other than spending their budget on good actors, good camera work, cinematography, a good score, the big things that you would spend money on in a traditional blockbuster, no, they took the storytelling path and they really took us in an interesting new direction.
It's absolutely phenomenal.
And created a very exciting space to be in. It was an alternate reality. And like I said, I think that this is a very alternate timeline from the one that we know. Because yes, time travel exists and was invented in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Back to the Oculus Rift. The space travel that they're talking about was likely advanced by the time loops that they were doing. I don't think it was just your regular Mercury missions, one foot on the moon. Given the time and the time window and the technologies that they have, they may have, you know, pitched in a little and advanced the space program a little.
I recommend this.
It was awesome. And so again, you got to know what you're getting into. It's definitely something that's different, but it's not your traditional explosions. It's not your traditional action film. This is a psychological thriller.
Shirts came off, but I don't know if I care.
Yeah, it was this.
Traumatic. These,
but advanced the story. Definitely advanced the story. It was not unnecessary nudity. It really did advance the story.
It was, you know, this reminds me of the very soft, light-handed storytelling of Journeyman.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't need flashy. It took its time and it just really got in there, did what it needed to do, and it gave you just so much for you to chew on in your mind think about. Because like I'm gonna be thinking about this the whole night.
If you're gonna make a time travel movie, you need to know ahead of time that you're gonna have to put pieces that make sense in a very delicate, specific order. We've seen some movies where they try to do time travel.
Woo!
And they just throw mess in there that never comes back. Man. Details that don't care. Impacts of things that happened in the past that no one addresses. It's sloppy. And the whole fun of making a time travel story is to make it neat and tight, and where things fit in, that and hints from the past fit in tightly and neatly in a way that advances the story in the future and gives you a sense of closure.
Preach it, Robo Minister.
So, when it's so hard, I mean, look, if you cannot do that, don't make a time travel movie. Alright, I suggest a documentary or a wedding film, I don't know, something else. Just don't try, because that's the hallmark of a time travel movie. Well, man, I mean, the little details, the little hints, the little pieces that, and I'm sure some that we've missed. You know, we'll probably watch it again and be like, what?
I mean, so like, after this brilliant tale, I'm super scared to watch this new 12 Monkeys TV show.
Well,
Eric says he's watching it.
I'm always up for time travel. I like time travel, so
but
I will
like
watch it.
The Bruce Willis film, 12 Monkeys, was a...
What?
Oh my God, Carl just side-eyed me.
The reason I looked at you that way is because you said the Bruce Willis film. I thought you were going to bring up Looper, which is why I shot you the look. I was my Looper face.
That was the 12 Monkeys.
Right.
I'm don't know what your problem is with Looper. It was a fine film.
There was too much going on in Looper. We've done that one already.
It's a fine film.
But I will say they did not pay as much attention to time travel loops and details and effective use of what do you mean, paradoxes the way that this movie did.
Oh, man.
This is how you use a paradox. The whole character
is
a paradox.
This is what Star Trek has been trying. They've been hinting at something like this for like years, and it's like, we don't want this to happen. This is when time travel goes really wrong, and this is what they never wanted to happen. They didn't want people sleeping with themselves to give birth to themselves. They never wanted to have tell that story. That's why they had specific rules, because they didn't want none of that going on.
Well, Doc Brown said the same thing. He was trying to keep Marty on the straight path, but man, time travel, it causes problems.
Yeah, and then like that third movie, with the train.
Okay, we're not going to talk about that, as that was not a good example.
That was. I don't know if I want to watch that one again.
So, is there anything else that you want to talk about? I mean, movies that stick with you.
This is one.
You got it.
Like I felt jaded for a while. Like I feel reinvigorated. To watch things now. I feel like I've been put in a good spot. I feel I've been put in a great direction, on a great path. I'm pumped up now. Like I want to see more good things, but I don't think I'm gonna get it. Like I just feel like there's a new world out there of smart writing, and I'm gonna get this for the rest of my life. And I know that's not going to happen, but it that was an amazing film. I want to see it again. I think I might own it. I might go on the website and download a screensaver or something, because it is like...
It's a good-looking movie.
It is
good-looking,
amazing.
Too. Yeah.
It is amazing. Because it's almost... It's a period piece. It's a lot of things that are just delightful about this film. And I need to... not know what's going on your computer car. Are we ready to wrap it up?
I just wanted to point out that this story is based on a Robert Heinlein short story.
I knew it felt...
Didn't it? Yeah.
It felt real. It felt real.
So, you can tell, if you're going to borrow from the greats, pick a really good one and do a good job of it.
You know why I knew this was old and based on a book?
How you know?
Because it did not use all the flashy technology and stuff.
Yep.
And it was like back in the 70s. And I'm pretty sure if it was described and they followed the book to the letter, that's why it was in the 40s and orphanage. And the timeline would look 60s and stuff like that. It felt... old, the way people used to think about science fiction.
You mean like Twilight Zone? Like,
yeah.
Outer Limits? Like how...
Yeah. Yes, Carl.
According to the Wikipedia entry, the science fiction short story, All You Zombies, was the name of it. It was called All You Zombies.
Didn't they say that in here, in the film at one point?
Written by Robert Heinlein, was written in one day in 1958.
It was rejected by Playboy?
Well, given the storyline, having sex with yourself probably would not have been a thing that Playboy wanted to discuss a whole lot. But,
that's what dudes are doing while they're reading Playboy.
Don't need to be reminded while they're reading the Playboy. You see, that's exactly. But to have this kind of vision, to have this kind of insight in 1958.
I knew
it. To bang out a story like this in one day.
Amazing. I missed this.
Genius.
It felt right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It felt good.
Good times.
Yeah.
Good times.
So, that's weird. Okay, so... Anything else?
Come on. I think that's plenty. That's okay. Plenty. We're just going to let this marinate.
Man, I think we're going to talk about it some more. I mean, we spent a lot of time recapping. I hope people don't mind that. Yelling at you because...
Well, you can cut that out.
I'm not cutting that out.
Because, you see, you are the commissioner.
And that's our show.
And much like...
Oh, so you had sex with yourself to give birth to yourself.
Well, you told me to. So you are the commissioner, and you will be able to adjust the timeline of what future generations hear or do not hear in this podcast. So I'm going to close my violin case now, and we'd love your feedback. So give us a call at 773-336-2686. You can go to our website to leave us a comment at scifipartyline.com. You can also leave a comment on iTunes.
You can find us online on Twitter and Gmail. I'm at RoboMinister. Cat is at FancyFinBox. You can reach us both at Sci-Fi Party Line on Facebook, Google Plus, and Stitcher Radio.
You see how we did that? You see we did the switcheroo we did just there? So thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you at the party next time. Bye!
Bye.
End of line.